This is Brock and Salk.
QBs must be punished.
I worked myself into a lather disagreeing with myself.
Streaming everywhere at 710sports.com.
Oh, no, you is the worst.
And the 710 Seattle Sports app.
Me and my beard, we'll pump up the crowd.
Yeah! Yeah!
Well, good morning. Final hour of power here, brought to you by our friends over at Tackle, T-A-K-L. Baseball at its very best. Writes scripts that no other sport can.
Weird ones.
Baseball at its very best. And typically it's September and October. It is a marathon of a season that you've got to just simply survive. And who is the last team standing? Or when you get to playoff baseball, who can win a pennant and get to that rarefied air and those grounds where stories and scripts get written that are better than anybody else? And right now, we are in playoff baseball mode for your Seattle Mariners in mid-August. We are. The Mariners have the fifth-best record in baseball. It's unfortunate that two of the others they're looking up at are in their division. And it's unfortunate that the Oakland A's are 37-12 over the last nearly 50 games and are the best team in baseball. And you are now facing them, and you're facing a possible sweep if you can't win at 12:35 today. But it has brought out some storylines and some scripts, Tom, that are must-see and must-read.
Yeah, it's funny that coming into today, between Felix Hernandez, James Paxton, and Robinson Cano, those three guys, I call them star players in the context of the Mariners, the hero today is Felix Hernandez.
Yes.
You'd have thought maybe Cano would have come back, done something. I mean, going into the game, he had the backing of his teammates, etc. We saw the returning hero, the big welcoming yesterday, which was kind of weird, but that's how it was portrayed. Fine. Paxton is your ace, nominally, going into the game, but Felix ends up being the one that tried
baseball,
to bail you out.
It's only baseball. Baseball is so unique in this way. I want to get to all three of those storylines, and Rashad Penny, and Height, and Russell Wilson, and all sorts of stuff to do here. But let's start here. The Oakland A's are the best team in baseball right now.
Right now. But
right now, the Oakland A's are the best team in baseball. Ryan Roland-Smith joined the afternoon guys yesterday. He does every single week, and he said, nope, his pick is still Houston. That when you get Verlander and you get Cole and you get those guys that post the way that they have all season long, he believes they're going to win the American League West. The Oakland A's trail them, the Astros, by just a game and a half. And you'll remember this started way back when Oakland went into Houston and took three or four from them. It's like, oh, okay, maybe this thing in Oakland is real. And then here comes Familia, and here comes Fires, and here comes a bullpen that's electric, and here comes Chris Davis that can hit bombs with Band-Aids underneath his eyes, and here comes an Oakland A's team that just simply doesn't lose. And right now, they're the best team in baseball, and over the last 2 days, the Mariners have played them competitively. It's gone down to the final at-bat with a runner in scoring position, and the Mariners an opportunity to tie or take the lead. And they couldn't get it done on either night, but they have been outplayed by the best team in baseball right now.
Do you think they're really that much better, though? I mean, we look at, first of all, I don't think that the A's are a better team than the Astros. They're just not. The Astros are so all-star laden, up and down at every position, everywhere in the rotation. They're a better team. They've hit a bit of a cold spell.
Well, there's no Altuve. There's no Springer. Correa is just coming back. McCullers is now hurt. They have been bit by the injury bug.
Yeah, they have been.
That was here in Seattle a year ago. So Oakland is not. And Houston has had to fight through some of those injuries for weeks and now months in ways that the Oakland A's have not.
Yeah, but you could put the Kansas City Royals offense with the Astros pitching, and they'd still have a chance to win. That pitching up and down, even with McCullers out, I'm still going to take my chances with those guys. The A's are the hottest right now, no question about that. But I look at these two lineups, Brock. I still feel like the Mariners are the more talented lineup. Rotation, I'm definitely taking Oakland. Bullpen, I'm probably taking Oakland, too. But
rotation, you're taking Oakland with Brett Anderson and Mike Fiers.
They're just more consistent. Manaea's the best pitcher between the two teams. Mm. Wouldn't you agree?
Well, he's been. Yeah,
he only lasted like two and some innings the other day against the Dodgers.
I mean, he's a 3.5 ERA
guy. Two nights ago?
Yeah, he's a 3.5 ERA guy. I mean, he's nice.
But that's what we have.
Yeah. Yeah.
What's James Paxton? He was like 3.54 coming into last night.
Yep. But unfortunately, he doesn't post. And you know, he's not been as consistent as they are. Their bullpen is overall better.
Yeah.
Their lineup has been better than your lineup. Okay, we went into this season saying this Mariners team and this Mariners lineup is lengthened and could do damage every single night. It's not for the last month and a half. And we used the Robbie excuse, and maybe that's true and verified, and the numbers would lay it out as he averaged, you know, this team averaged 4.7 runs when he was there the first 50 or so games. But to be frank and honest, the Mariners lineup has been disappointing this year.
Haniger, Cano, Segura, Cruz, I think is slightly better on paper than Simeon, Chapman, Lowry, and Davis. I really do. Now, those guys are playing better right now.
Yep.
But if we're looking at batting averages on base percentage and even power, I think I'm taking the Mariners front four right there.
But 5 through 9, they don't hit 203, 213, 225. 5 through 9 in Oakland's lineup, they don't have some of the massive holes. Certainly in on-base percentage and batting average, the Mariners do. Heredia is hitting, what, .130? And he was playing nearly every single day over the last month and a half. You know, Kyle Seager's hitting .227. Mike Zunino barely hits over .200. You know, they don't have those kind of holes, 5 through 9 in their lineup. And because of it, they have been the best team in baseball over the last 50 games. And today becomes an awfully big afternoon game that you can hear right here on 710 at 1235. You'd hate to. Can you overcome it? Yes, because you'll play 4 more down in Oakland and 3 more in Seattle. You still have 7 games after today with Oakland. Can you afford to lose and be swept in Oakland today? Yes, you can. But you would sure for this team, for all of the ups and the downs, and even the stories coming out of yesterday, you would sure hope for this team they can salvage one this afternoon.
It's funny you bring up the bottom of the lineup, Brock, because last night with 2 outs, Span singles, Seager singles, so you got 2 on, you're only down by one. Between the next two guys, who would you rather have at the plate?
Zunino
or Cameron Maben?
Or D. Gordon.
Maben's not the worst hitter in the world. He really hasn't shown that much yet. There's a couple of singles here and there. I'm not quite sure what he adds to the team.
He's got a 9-game hitting streak.
Yep.
But is Zunino like the last guy you want up in that situation?
Howdy, probably.
No, you don't. You absolutely want that guy up there.
Howdy. You don't mind Zunino up against some of the starters that they've faced this year, and even Oakland starters are not dominating and overwhelming. Any dominant pitcher, do you really want to see Mike Zunino up against with some of the holes in his swing and holes in his game? I don't.
I didn't even really want to see Seager up there, but he got a single.
He did.
He's been hitting a little bit lately.
He got it.
And you're probably listening to this, and you're probably thinking, who is Mike Zunino? And like I said, he's a loser. He's a nobody. Nobody knows him.
Is that Astros guy?
That's our Astros guy.
What's his problem?
Hey, just about everything. Certainly with Seattle Mariners. So that is one story. This is Potpourri. I promise Lydia said in my ear, am I going to self-regulate this segment so we can get to the 3 or 4 stories? I'm self-regulating, Lydia. I hear you in your nice, kind little whisper, and you did not even doing it in my ear, but I'm pretending that I'm hearing you say, okay.
Yippity-freaking-doo-dah, Brock.
Thank you. Can we get to the couple other stories? One of the things we've given some short shrift to on this show this morning is a return to Robbie Cano.
Short shrift?
We've given Robbie Cano some short shrift. It's been a lot about James Paxton, been a lot about that game. It's not been about Robbie Cano coming back. And give me cut number, let's see here. Give me cut number 12, if you wouldn't mind, C. Raj, on what it was like for Robbie Cano to come back into the fold to talk to his team, who, by the way, showed up for him. When he met with the press, it wasn't Robbie Cano solo. It was everybody in the positional team sitting there in that meeting with the press with Robbie Cano. What's that process been like for Robbie? Here he was yesterday.
Well, I mean, it's just like, today, I mean, we had this conversation before. And, you know, as a man, I just, you know, told them I want to give my face and say that I apologize man to man, that, you know, let the team down. But, you know, for me now, I don't want to, like, you know, focus in the past. It's just about being positive, move on, and team's playing really good, and last thing I want is just be a distraction.
Very clearly, Robbie has been instructed, and Robbie is following along, that this isn't going to be about you. This is not going to be the Robbie Cano show. It's not going to be the Robbie Cano sits down with Barbara Walters. It's not going to be the Robbie Cano, I was wronged. It is Robbie at every turn. This is going to be about the team. And you heard that, I thought, beautifully in his first messaging, just with the writers with no microphones, and I thought yesterday as well, that it's not going to be about me in the past. It is only going to be about the we in this team moving forward.
I dug what the team did supporting him coming back. I dug what he said, taking as much ownership, coming up just short of coming out and saying, I took a masking agent, right? He didn't say that explicitly, but okay. I don't expect him to either. But some of the treatment of this yesterday
was tough on you.
I don't want to call out anybody specifically.
Yes.
But there's one group of people that I'm thinking of that I thought treated him like the conquering hero coming back from war or coming back from an injury or something, something that he didn't bring on himself. And the reality is that he did let the team down. He was not here for 80 games. He's a critical member of this team. Now, I'm not going to boo him. I'm not in that camp. I want to be firm about that.
And the Oakland
I'm not
fans
boo
did
him.
Last night.
They can't, but they're the opposing fans. I get that. But that conversation about what kind of reaction is he going to get at Safeco, I don't think he should be booed. I wouldn't do that. I don't harbor any ill will towards him. But to treat it like, oh, it's Robinson Cano and he's a hero coming back. Yeah. Welcome back, Rob. I don't understand that. This is put your head down and go to work time. That seems like what he's doing.
And I think that's exactly
what
he's
doing. That's not the way I feel like it's being portrayed.
Okay, well, how about those that are going to be like the DA, the haters out there? Okay, what about those that are going to be critical of him? Robbie Cano asked about that yesterday, how he's going to handle some of those folks. Cut 17.
Last thing I want to just focus on the fans or whoever going to say anything. My focus is the team, help the team, and I've been through this before, like at the All-Star game in Kansas City. When I went back to New York, I mean, that's something that, to be honest, is not going to bother me. You know, they can say whatever they want, and, you know, they got the right to say whatever they want. It's for me to focus on them and get myself or my mind away from the game. It's just going to go out and focus on the game, and my goal is the team, and help them to win a game, not focus on what people's going to say regardless, even before this. You know, a lot of there's people at the game that always say, boo, you'll say something bad. I mean, regardless, it is what it is.
Does any athlete ever have to pay attention to that stuff? I mean, you're so insulated from the people who are actually going to criticize you.
I kind of like these mean tweets. I kind of got a chuckle out of some of them. You know what's really weird, too? I can still remember some of the good ones. I remember like warming up with the Colts, and this guy, I forget where it was, saying was like, man, you just suck. Like, you just belong in the CFL. Like, just look at you. Like, I don't know. You just kind of remember. And sometimes I would chuckle and teammates would chuckle, right? You would hear
but would it ever
some
bug
of that
you?
Banter. Not really. Certainly not once you start playing.
The taunting is one thing in game.
Yes.
I'm talking about the stuff that people say about you that you know is true.
Mm-hmm.
Right? I mean, you did get caught. You did get suspended. People criticized you. That type of stuff you can insulate yourself from.
Yeah, I liked what he said right there. I thought this was an important little line in that whole commentary. They got a right to say it. And Robbie, you've given them that right.
Right.
Yeah, your choice and you being suspended for 80 games and you taking a masking agent, you've now given everybody the right to criticize and doubt. And I don't know. I kind of appreciated him saying that amongst the other stuff that is, oh, it is what it is. I'm used to it. No, they've got a right to do it. They do have a right to do it. And those Oakland fans, they didn't boo him last night because he's Robbie Cano. They booed him because now they view him as a cheater.
Yeah, and that's what happens to guys who come back from suspensions. You go to opposing parks, you get booed. Maybe you get a little bit of booing at home, but I think I'm not going to be in that crowd.
Yeah, well, I sure liked that yesterday. Cut number 11 here as well. What it meant to have those guys in the room yesterday. I mean, they went out of their way, and it was Seager, and it was Healy, and it was D. Gordon. It was the rest of the positional players that went out of their way that wanted to make sure it wasn't just Robbie put on display. Cut 11.
Oh, it's mean a lot. Thank you, guys. It's mean a lot to me. It's always mean a lot to see the way teammates support you, you know, and that I really appreciate that. I didn't expect this, but, you know, thank you, guys.
What did your baseball eye, by the way, see of him last night? From purely taking all of this stuff out, just from a baseball perspective, watching him play first, watching him back in the batter's box, what did your baseball eye, it felt fairly...
I thought it looked pretty normal.
It felt pretty seamless, didn't it?
Yeah, I mean, you're going to need to see more than a couple of games from him at first base, but at the plate, he looked pretty normal.
Gosh, that swing is so smooth, right?
Yeah.
It was like watching Warren Moon at 45 in training camp with the Seahawks. In like a 90, whatever year it was 97, yeah. I was with the Huskies, and I was looking through some old stuff. Molly was cleaning stuff out, and there was an old newspaper article with him and I on the cover. He was with the Seahawks. I was going in my last year at Washington, and I remember going out and taking that photo shoot, actually, at the Seahawks facility and watching him practice and just watching him throw still. His legs were not what they used to be. But, man, could he still throw a beautiful – he threw as beautiful a spiral as anybody. And Robbie Cano, like his second hit in there yesterday, like that swing to the – just driving it to left center field is about as smooth and sweet a swing as there is.
Yeah, I guess if there's a player who you – you never know who's going to come back and slump for a little bit or come back and be hot. But if there's a player who you can depend on for some consistency, yeah, it's going
to
be him.
Okay, self-regulate, self-regulate. We're going to get to another story here. Wassel's in for Salk. It's Brock and Salk here on 710 ESPN Seattle. And you're right. Out of Cano, out of Paxton getting the ball in a game you so desperately wanted to win, and that Felix guy that I heard you and Bob yesterday talking about saying, what role is there for him?
Yeah, which role does he want? Which role would he embrace? And which role are they comfortable giving him?
Because it sure seems like even the game the other night, if you're not going to put him in, okay, you're not going to put him in Houston up 2-0. You made that decision. You're warming him up twice. If you're not going to put him in down 4-1, you're going to throw Casey Lawrence, who you waive anyway. If you're not going to put him in there, where are you going to put in Felix? Well, how about last night? How about after the fact that you're presumed ace gets knocked out of the game? Yeah, it was Felix that came in and saved the day, and Scott Service cut number 6 will tell you he did one amazing job.
That's the spot. He did a great job. Awesome. He went out there, he just got out into the dugout against the ball off Pax, as he knew right away it's his ball and he had to take it. And I thought he really competed well. The key to this ball club, you got to throw strikes. You got to throw strikes against the A's. He did that. Thought his fastball had pretty good life at the bottom of the zone. They get 7 or 8 ground ball outs tonight. Curveball was effective. He really competed well.
And it's just baseball, Tom. As I said to start the segment, it writes some of the best scripts ever. You don't know when he's going to come. You try to make it as comfortable, soft a landing as possible. Nope. Paxton's going out in the first in an enormous game. You're coming in. It's not going to be clean. You're going to have to warm up funky. Cut number 7 here. Yeah, it's going to be very different for you, Felix.
I mean, like I said, it was a little different. I'm a professional, so if I had to do my job, I have to do it. Just go out there. First line I came out in the first inning to the bullpen. I don't know why, but just because sometimes I go to the third, or the second, or the fourth. It was weird.
It was weird.
You know what, though? I bet you coming in the first inning like that was more comfortable for him than it would have been coming in the sixth inning with runners
sure.
on.
Sure, yes.
It was about as close to a start as you can get.
And
for a
by the way, appearance. Chris Davis, 1 of 18 against him all time. All of these guys, you saw it. He has owned the Oakland A's, man. I mean, he's faced him how many different times on opening days, too? And in that building, he has owned those guys. And that first at-bat, though, with Chris Davis, I'll be honest, when he wasted pitch after pitch after pitch, and it was a 10-pitch at-bat, you're like, well, this is why he was in the bullpen. He just could not get, even at 0-2. He just didn't have that ability to get him out. And then he gets the enormous double play. And you could just feel it in the next inning with 6 pitches, boom, 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 3 outs. You could feel him getting into some of that rhythm. And because of it, he's going to be back in the rotation.
He is for now. That's the interesting part if we want to spin it forward here.
Oh, he is?
Yeah, I know. He's going to be taking Paxton's spot, but is he in permanently? Because Paxton's not going to be out the rest of the year.
Is Marco Gonzalez going to continue to get a run? Or are they going to give him, a little bit of relief? This is just a script of baseball that's beautiful in sport. Like, here's this guy that's cast off his throne. You're done. You can't play anymore. You've got a 5.8 ERA. You're one of the worst in baseball. And, oh, by the way, you're not particularly buying in. And a skipper doesn't say the kindest things about you. Maybe leaves you out there to dry a little bit, too, so you can wear it. And why don't you just be relegated to the bullpen? And I don't even know when I'm going to put you in. And then the script is written. Oh, man. How about right now, Skip? How about I take this ball and I shove it for 5 2/3, being the best I've been arguably this entire season, but certainly over the last 2.5 months, and I remind you and everybody else, and maybe even myself, what I'm capable of doing.
Well, I hope that last part is true, because I hope it's not, hey, I went out there last night, gave you 5 2/3, gave up a couple of runs, I'm back, I'm fixed, because that's not the case.
No,
that's definitely not the case. If he's going to be in the rotation, he has to continue to pitch like that and probably even a little bit better.
Has it helped, by the way, 2 hours and 20 minutes? I'll self-regulate and quickly get to our final story here before the best of Russell Wilson. Russell joined us 2 hours ago. I got three or four cuts I want to play and dig into that conversation, answer the question, Jerk, to wrap it all up. Has it helped over 2 hours and 21 minutes to talk Paxton a few different times? Because it's kind of helped me. I'll be honest with you. I was super frustrated last night. I went into my, like, you just got to be available. I'm sorry. I went into my final conversation, not in this building, because we were at the old Seahawk facility when Mike Holmgren called me in after my 6th year in the league where I spent the year on IR, and he said, we're going to waive you. I'm sorry, you're just not available. And he was 100% right. And they were hard words to hear, but I had spent that year on the IR, like I spent a bunch of my years with every known calamity from concussions to shoulders to ribs to back to groins to ankles to every injury known to man that I had. And I find myself last night watching Paxton super frustrated. Like, come on, man.
I don't think that.
But honestly, 2 hours and 22 minutes,
do
I
feel
better? I can't be mad at him.
It's tough to stay mad for that long. I mean, I was pretty frustrated this morning.
Yes, we both were.
But, I mean, what are you going to do? If the guy's hurt, the guy's hurt.
The guy's hurt.
If his arm's swollen, he can't throw like he normally does.
He's just unlucky. You know, I mean, he's just the unlucky guy that, you know, and he said this after the game as well. Cut number four here, lastly, from James Paxton.
You know, I had the same kind of thing happen, I think, in 2016. I got hit by a pitch, came back, hit me in a very similar spot. I forget how long that took. You know, hopefully it's not long. We're going to do everything we can to get the swelling out of there as soon as possible.
I'll be honest, probably unreasonable and irrational. You know what I wanted last night?
What?
I wanted him to pick up that ball with his right hand and throw it to first base. Underhanded. That's what I want. I was screaming that. That's my irrational, probably fan, whatever, emotion, unreasonable. Then I wanted them to take the little soccer spray they have at the World Cup and just that magic spray that they spray on guys that, like, tear their knee and all of a sudden they spray that stuff and they go back out there and they play.
Is it deer antler spray?
Who knows what that is?
Quick question. What's the difference between Paxton not going after that ball and Cam Newton not going after the fumble in the Super Bowl? Is there a difference?
Well, the way his leg was bent?
Shut up. No, not going after the ball for whatever reason you want to give.
Well, his leg.
Because Newton obviously got a ton of criticism for that.
His leg was bent in a way that he could not do that. He explained afterwards.
Yeah.
My leg was bent, you see. What was similar or different?
When an important player on the team pulls up lame.
Thank you.
And doesn't make the play.
Yeah. It was frustrating. It was maddening. And as much as it is for you and I, amplify it 1,000-fold for Jerry and Scott that need their guy when it matters the most. But unfortunately, he couldn't do it yesterday, and now let's hope it's just one start. It's more than likely we're going to hear he'll go on the DL today for at least 10 days, and it may be more than one start. But I sure hope he can make 3 or 4 in the month of September when it really matters.
It better not happen in a playoff game or a wild card game. That's all I have to say. Last night was a wild card game,
yes.
I'd be furious.
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 Furious. Russell Wilson joined us 2 hours ago. I got 3 or 4 really good cuts we'll dig into before we answer your questions. It's Brock and Salk at 710 ESPN Seattle. Marcus Salk here. Tommy Wassel in for Salk. He threatened that he wouldn't be here today. He threatened at the end of the show yesterday that I'm not going to show up. I'm not going to deal with some of the heartache and some of the pain, some of the torture that we were giving Salk yesterday and answer the question, Jerk, and he did.
You guys gave him a rough time.
Yeah, he's been a no-show today. I think he will be back tomorrow, but he was a no-show, and he missed out on Russell Wilson this morning, who stepped up to the mic about 7:20, gave us a good 15 or 20 minutes. And, Tom,
yeah,
you felt like you made a real connection with the quarterback.
I saw into his soul. I saw that there was more there than I think most people think. You know, I was watching a good movie the other day.
Yeah.
Murder on the Orient Express. Have you seen that one?
Ooh, been a while.
Well, it just came out a few months ago.
The remake.
No, I have not seen the
remake. There's an interesting conversation that takes place between two guys where one guy wants the other one to do him a favor, and the guy refuses. And the reason he gives, he says, put simply, I don't like your face.
Oh.
He just looks at him.
Interesting.
Looks at the look on his face, okay. however you want to take that.
Sure.
Says, I don't like your face. I don't want to be associated with you.
Huh.
And this morning, I looked at Russell Wilson's face.
Yeah, you did.
And I decided that he has a good face.
I was right in between the two of you. You were sitting down. You sometimes stand up for interviews when players are sitting. I think you like that domineering kind of standpoint of being taller than them.
Right. But usually. You, not today.
Not today. No, you were sitting there right there looking into Russell. And when Russell talked about how you're great, cut number five here, I think this resonated with you. Yes, he gets ripped for being a robot and saying the same things all the time, but I thought this was some perspective on the way Russell goes about doing his job.
I've always lived life with a purpose. You know, your lifestyle can't be random. You know, it can't be random in how you prepare and how you work, and if you want to be great at something, and especially playing quarterback. You know, I believe it's the toughest position in the world, and the circumstances and what it takes to be great. And to be great consistently, and I've always wanted to be consistent.
Your mentor, what is he called? Emotional intelligence. I think Colin Cowherd has said that. Just that emotional quotient of staying pretty flat.
Yeah.
And when you think about the elite quarterbacks, Peyton, Tom, Drew, even Big Ben to a degree. I don't think he's the workaholic that those other guys are, but they're all pretty manic in their routine and in their lifestyle. They're not random. You know, they're not all over the place. You know, that's why Baker Mayfield's got a little edge to him. I think he's a little scary. Like, can you do this every week in the league and not for a year or two, but are you going to be great and the greatest to do it for 7 years now, Russell? And I think that's pretty darn telling.
Yeah, that's why Cam Newton, I think, he struggles with that a little bit. He's a supremely talented football player, maybe the best athlete of all those guys, but I think that type of thing, concerns about public image and overall presentation, I think things like that get in the way for him.
I like that. You can't be random. You can't be random if you are going to be an elite quarterback and you're going to sustain as an elite one. I asked Russell what a couple of his favorite stories were here through this 3 years of camp. Year number seven of training camp and a lot of young guys. Cut number two here. I like this answer from Russell as well.
But when you put an install in and there's a little nuance, a little caveat, a little small information that I may say, or Coach Schottenheimer may say, or somebody says in the meeting that may not be on the screen, it may not be in the wall or whatever, and then you transfer that to the practice field and you wink at a guy, you do this, you know, you give him a hand signal or whatever it may be, and that guy gets it. And that's happened so often.
That tells you right there that he still loves football, right? You always ask about, when we talk about the draft, you ask about players, do you love football? What percentage of players really love football? If he's still getting kicks out of things like that,
sure,
that's a big deal.
Sure, and that's some of the infusion of new. Like, there's trade-offs on the negative side. There's no question about it. Right? The continuity, the loss of experience, talent, all these benefits that this thing has had and Russell's had for 6 years running the same system. But the flip side of that with some of the newness and freshness is it can, like, I think, infuse you with some of what you just heard from him. Like, that was really cool. You know, DeMarius Stringfellow, you know, it wasn't just like in the install to run this route at 12 yards. Hey, man, we get this look. Run it at 10. You know, convert it here. I'll give you a little. And then to go out and execute, it brings an awful lot of joy. You talk about the love of football. That's actually cut number one. What Russell pointed to with some of the new voices, and in particular the guy in his ear calling the plays that he pointed to with Brian Schottenheimer.
Yeah, I mean, I think he's a great – first of all, I think he's a great ball coach. He knows ball, you know, and he's passionate about the game. He loves it every day, you know, and so it's a lot of fun. We really, really enjoy it together just because, you know, all the film we get to watch, you know, we get to talk about Joe Montana. We get to talk about some of the great players that have played.
Here's what's cool about Shoddy, too. He's been around some of the best. Like in college, you know where Schottenheimer played his college ball? Played at Florida. For Steve Spurrier.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, he was like I don't know if he was a walk-on, but he didn't have a great career there, but he was there with Steve Spurrier. The guy has bounced around some of the best and brightest minds.
Plus, he grew up with this stuff with his father.
He's been around Andrew Luck. He's been around Drew Brees. He's been around Joe Montana. He grew up around with his dad, you know, through all those years, and he's been around it. And that's another, I think, just kind of this infusion of some of this pretty – you know, just goodwill, just energy, just like, yeah, man, let's, and this is why we're doing this, and so we're going to run power, and look at this play off of it, and look at all of this, and I think that's a benefit to Russell, and I think it's a benefit to the head coach as well. I think they're both juiced because of it.
And not that Brian is identical to his father, but if you think about it, Marty Schottenheimer was Pete Carroll before Pete Carroll in this league. He was always giving speeches, impassioned speeches, that type of guy. He wasn't quite as... Oh, what's the word?
Charismatic.
Pete is like effervescent, Marty was more nuts and bolts, but I believe in you guys.
Sure.
You know, that sort of thing. He was, for that Pete's era, like he was a very positive guy.
Pete's evangelistic, and Schottenheimer was like a teacher.
Maybe.
He's like an evangelist. He loves it. He loves the whole deal. But
right.
Marty loved coaching.
Yes, he did. And so while everything's being freshened up around here, new coaching staff, new players, there is still some consistency there. You bring in Brian Schottenheimer, it's more energy. It's more Pete Carroll type culture.
Well, here's the last thing from Russell Wilson. Speaking of being critical of guys, and that position is one that's got lots of critics. You know, we can be critical of guys' injury situation. We'd be critical of guys coming off suspension. We can be critical of a lot of different guys. Russell wants to make sure that he is his biggest critic. Cut 7.
I've always wanted to be my biggest, you know, critic, you know, and how I prepare, you know, and I think that there's always the fine details, you know, and I think that, you know, from how you hand the ball off to the checks and the things that you do and the fake checks and everything else, you know, you really want to be able to master the game.
In year 7 into the sucker, you have a lot of opportunity to do that. And just don't take it for granted. Right? I mean, that's what was John Clayton and Danny O'Neill. I think one of their reminders over this 3 weeks of camp, you got a pretty darn good one here. You know, that guy is one of the 5 best on the planet to play the position. And right now, I think through this training camp, got people excited in this building. Even Doug Baldwin, right, has been super positive. As positive as you're going to ever hear Doug about Russell and the steps that he's taken moving this thing forward. And if he's great and he's elite, this team is going to be in the mix.
It's interesting to think about Russell Wilson and continuing to develop, because sometimes guys are great right out of the gate, then they plateau a little bit. I'm not sure what this next step is for him. His career to this point has consisted of running behind a pretty weak offensive line, having to make something out of nothing, and excelling at it.
Yep.
It's not like he's burdened with that and he can't, you know, it's like David Carr.
Yep.
Back in the day,
yeah.
Where he just couldn't do that. Or Alex Smith had a million coordinators, bad offenses. Russell's done well in spite of that. So if things are actually set up for him to succeed,
sure.
What will he do with that?
It'd be pretty awesome. It'd be the second half of 2015 is what I said.
Yeah.
Remember the second half of 2015?
Hopefully.
When he shattered records and led the league in passer rating and just about everything else. So certainly something for us to watch both today as these guys will hit the practice field. I think just 2 days left, today and tomorrow, with all the folks on the berm, and then we'll be right around the corner to the regular season. Need your questions to 710-710. Tom's certainly going to ask the control room for it when we come back to answer your questions for one more segment as he sits in for Salk. Sprock and Salk, 710 ESPN Seattle.
This is Brock and Salk. Answer the question, jerk.
Keep asking questions. Come on, I'll answer them. Come on, I'm here. I'm going to answer your questions, dang it.
Answer my question! The question, jerk!
Well, don't just stand there. Answer the question, jerk!
That's Blitz right there, by the way. He's taller. Look at him. Tom, he don't care. Blitz don't care that he's 5'8".
Yeah, but those shoes add like 5 inches to him.
Blitz don't care about
his
height.
Yeah, I don't care. I don't care.
So maybe you're just wearing the wrong shoes, Tom.
That's right. Probably it.
Yeah, that's right.
Oh,
Blitz don't care. Oh, yeah.
All right.
For those of you that can't see this on the stream, that'd be all of you. Blitz comes out every day about this time and gives us a little bit of love. And about this time, we answer your questions to wrap up every show. 710-710. What you got for me, control room? What
Jerks,
you got?
You buy a single-A baseball team. What small town would you put it in?
That's a great question.
Small town?
What small town would you want it to be in? If you could buy a single-A team and you could place it anywhere in America, where would you want to spend your summertime? I don't think, as much as I love the South, And I've said before that Mobile, Alabama, one of the most underrated towns in America. I don't know over a baseball season in the heat and humidity if I could deal with that.
That's kind of what minor league baseball is all about.
It is.
When I think of minor league baseball, I think of the Southeast.
Give me the Bay Area. Give me the East Bay.
I would go Monterey. I would go like Monterey, California.
Give me the East Bay.
Modesto, I mean the nuts for the Mariners.
After
that's
I've been
nice.
In like Walnut Creek and that area, give Concord. Give me the East Bay for sure.
I'd go Dumpwater, Florida.
Dumpwater?
Yeah.
Oh, interesting. I may go off the board here a little bit. I may go like Wenatchee. Give me a team.
Wenatchee? That's not a bad area.
Yeah. I'm dealing with a lot of forest fires over there right now.
Collegiate Wood Bat League team out there.
Do they over in Wenatchee?
Yeah.
Yeah, not bad. Next.
Jerks, have you ever had a toasted peanut butter and bacon sandwich?
I'm not eating peanut butter on any sandwich.
What? Really?
Warm or cold.
What? Peanut butter and jelly?
It makes me gag.
Knock it off.
Come on, I've told this story a million times.
No, you have not.
Yes, I have.
I've never heard it.
I ate peanut butter and jelly every day of my life until I was about five. And one day I put it down. I said, Mommy, I'm not eating this anymore, and I haven't eaten it since.
Is that true?
That's 100% true. If I smell it, I'll gag.
Really?
Yeah. That's true. So that's God's honest truth.
Well, God's honest truth is that laughter right there is genuine and real. None of us had ever heard that before.
Maybe I've told Bob and Groz.
You must have.
Times.
I never heard it. You had it every day, and then one day you just said, Mommy, I'm done.
I said, like Roberto Duran, I said, no mas.
Like James Paxton last night.
Yep, I'm out.
Done. I'm out. Can't pick up the ball. I'm out. No mas.
Won't even try.
So a grilled, say that again, a grilled peanut butter and bacon?
Yes.
So we, Molly just reordered a panini. Do you have a panini bread maker at home?
Kind of
one of those. It's almost like a George Foreman grill. I mean, you could probably do it.
Yeah. You can do it in a pan on a grill.
Ours broke. We had a nice one. Like, I think it was a gift, maybe even like a wedding gift. It's a big heavy duty one years ago. It broke. So we finally ordered again. I think I might try that. You probably want to do that on the panini maker, right? The bacon, the peanut butter, the bread.
Yes.
Wouldn't the heat with the peanut butter be kind of a weird taste?
Could be.
I might try that.
Have you guys ever tried that? Anybody in the room in the control room?
Is there anybody here in the control room?
No,
or
I haven't
what?
Tried that specific one.
Okay.
But I have had like bacon on maple bars, which is a similar concept.
Phenomenal, sure.
Yeah.
Jerks, specifically Tom, when you walk into a room, do you ever pretend in your mind that you're over 6 foot plus?
I've never tried that. I know that the reality isn't true, so I just, you know, I'm so used to being short.
Are you sure your life would be that much different?
Yeah,
are you sure?
I'm pretty sure.
Howdy, you're sure of it too?
I'm positive.
This is the one thing that you two are very like-minded on.
Yes.
Well, we've succeeded in spite of it.
Yes.
So I can't say well, I'm not some bum on the street who just, you know, couldn't overcome it.
Right.
But at the same time, yeah, there are some problems, especially working amongst ex-jocks.
How do you explain this then for both of you guys? The majority of entertainers and in Hollywood are all under 5'9".
That's because we couldn't become athletes. We had to become musicians.
I mean, the majority of those. Like, is Tom Cruise, would his life be different at 6'3"?
Well, Brock, the difference
Richard
in
Gere,
is
Mel
that
Gibson,
they have spent
I mean,
so much time working on their personality and their ability to be like somebody else because they can't get anything being the way they are on their
point.
Own.
Great point. Why do you think they're all so insecure?
Yes.
What do you guys think that your lives would be like if you were tall?
I don't know.
Well, I'd be making twice as much money.
Oh, okay.
How about all the NASCAR drivers? How about all the Navy SEALs, the fighter pilots? How about all of them that are all 5'9 and under?
What are you talking about?
Do you think any of them ever have the same diminished?
Yes, I think they do.
I don't think they do.
Yes, they do.
Pretty sure they don't.
Why? How can you be so sure?
Because they protect America.
You don't know the pain that they've gone through in their life. I mean, so what if they're a pilot? What's that got to do with it? We all persevere. Next.
Next question.
Jerks, what are some things that you put jalapenos on?
Lydia doesn't even know what to do with you two right now. Do you realize that?
Lydia, do you have any problems?
Yes. She doesn't even know what to... See, Raj, no. How tall are you?
I'm a woman. And I'm a minority, so like I probably have experienced some of this, but I just don't know.
I know you have because I've heard you talk about it. It's the exact same thing.
No, I haven't faced any real adversity like that. Like you, Tom.
Yes, I think you have.
How tall are you, by the way?
Me?
Yeah.
5'8".
You're legitimately 5'8"?
Yeah, I think so. Unless I've started shrinking.
Right. Howdy, how tall are you?
5'7".
Legit. You guys are legitimately 5'7", 5'8". I don't think your life would be that much different.
Yes, it would.
No, I really don't think it would.
No idea.
I really don't think it would.
No idea.
There's no way that...
You've been big your whole life.
Do you think my life would be different if I was 5'8"?
Yes! You wouldn't be in the NFL!
Do you not think I'd have been a fighter pilot then?
You could have been a fighter pilot. Sure.
You could have been an NFL quarterback.
You could have been a lot of other things.
Or maybe a pitcher, or maybe a golfer, or maybe any other thing.
Nah, you wouldn't be any. It wouldn't be any
of those. A kicker? Nope. Maybe.
Nah.
So this all come down to the fact that you couldn't play like professional sports, Tom and Howdy? Like, is that like the biggest difference?
By the way, do you know how tall Brooks Koepka is? That mammoth of a man, Brooks Koepka, who's like a giant on the tour. Do you know how big he is? I was chatting with Brady about
this. How tall?
He's like 6 foot, a buck 85. He's not even that big. Not even that big. All those guys are 5'8", Tom. They're your size.
It's a question of masculinity. Okay, the tall guys were what all the girls went for back in the day, and that just left a scar. All right? Like, I had to work extra hard to get girls later on. I had to find something unique.
Well, boy, howdy, was making out with them in high school on the stage.
Whoa.
You were the lead. You were the lead actor on the stage, howdy.
Making
you
kissing scenes issue. Out of scenes that
That's
weren't
right.
kissing scenes.
You had no problem.
It's all about getting girls. We know that.
You're crazy. So DJ Fluker said, right? NFL guy.
It's one of the reasons why guys become football players. And you know what? He's right. He's absolutely
you know
right.
What? The show's got to end. It's got to end now.
I thought you wanted to do another 5 hours. Is Clayton coming out here or what?
Oh, the hay. Where's the hay?
Barn.
Bye.
Guys, it's a chopper!